The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
You're joining We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM. You know, we would have been, we should have called ourselves The Late Show, but the name was already taken.
The Late Early Show.
Unfortunate. Super unfortunate. So, let's see. Bob's sick. So we've managed to take somebody else out of the mix with the slime. Do you have the slime? Is that what version you have?
I think that's what we've been calling it.
You're not running, so I'm assuming it's the slime, because the other version seems to make people run around a lot.
No, thankfully, run
into other rooms.
Fairly unpleasant.
Thankfully, the head has stayed fairly dry, but the good news is I'm a lot better than I was yesterday.
Oh, well, cool.
The will is there, Bob.
Nice. I'm getting almost done. It's been a month. I figured I should get well now. Yeah. And we canceled several engagements with Bill's mom, so at this point it just looks like we're lying if we're sick again. And we have with us Dr. Piyush Tanuka, who has got a fabulous bio he sent me, and my little computer's not on, so now I'm going to have to make him tell me. I know his wife is a something/oncologist, and her name is Pramila. Then I exhaust my information.
Yeah, welcome, Doctor.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me on your show. It's an honor to be on your show.
Well, you know, we like to do stuff that people don't get to hear the whole story. That's sort of our niche, is let's tell people the rest of the story. And you have a lot of different topics. We have a wide range of where we can go today. I know immigration, Obamacare, and there was something else you threw in.
Well,
what were other choices? we'll try to keep the mixing to a minimum.
My favorite one is the Second Amendment.
Oh, that's right. How could I forget that? That's right. Okay, so three top hits.
So for the people who do not know me,
yes, please.
I just wanted to let you know my name is Piyush Tanuka, and it's a complicated name.
Not really.
Sounding.
Not so bad, though, when you read it.
Last name, D-H-A-N-U-K-A. I grew up in a small town of India and went to medical school there, met my wife, future wife there, Pramila, who was my classmate. Moved to New York at the age of almost 25. We both completed our residency and fellowship there. And then after completing that, moved to Reading 8 years ago just to start our practice, because we wanted to live in a community which is family oriented and also appreciates freedom and opportunity to work the way you want and live the way you want.
You didn't think New York was a great family environment, huh?
And now with the new tax rate, I bet you're all happy. You're like, oh, we're so smart.
You know, I love the Museum of Natural History. Love
oh, sure.
The Botanical Gardens.
Oh, there's some great things, yeah.
It's a great place. I loved it. And we visited there all the time. But living there,
no.
That's another thing.
Yeah, that would be tough.
And your practice, tell us again, your practice is what?
I'm a gastroenterologist, GI. Specialist. My wife is as you were mentioning earlier, she's a hematologist oncologist.
That's it. I knew it was something plus oncologist.
We have been very successful here and very well accepted by the community. And that's what brought us here in first place, and that's what keeps us here.
You told me at a social thing how you wound up in Reading, because I was curious.
Right, I
grew up in Connecticut, and I wound up in Reading. You know, it seems a little nutty.
Right.
So tell people how you actually got here. It's kind of fun.
So we moved, as I said earlier, from India to U.S. all the way around the globe. And now, after completing our fellowship, we had to choose where to go. The best thing about America is it gives you the opportunity to move wherever you want and start fresh.
You know, that's really an interesting point, because people, I don't think, realize that just the ability to travel anytime, anywhere you want, right, isn't something that's really that common in some other countries.
Right. And then you can pick up and start a new fresh start. Mm-hmm. Wherever you go, you're allowed to do that. So, Reading, we were looking for a community which is a medium-sized community, family-friendly, and has a medical practice environment where you don't have to be employed by a big hospital or big organization like Kaiser or Sutter.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a solo practitioner. You can be an old-style country doctor and still survive. That's a community we were looking for. And there are some small, medium town. Definitely California, Northern California's beautiful geography, beautiful climate was a big factor in that. However, the most important thing was when we came here, we were very well accepted here, and that's what kept us here.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah, the last thing you want to do is move to small town USA and be the odd man out.
All right. So that's what brought us to Reading, and since then we have looked at, sometimes just for the sake of fun, we have looked at other options and say, do we want to go anywhere else? And both my wife and me, we have always come down to this conclusion again, no place like Reading.
It really isn't. Reading is very, very unique.
And you have three kids here.
We have three kids here. One of my daughter has gone on to attend a college, back to East Coast. My other two kids are still here.
Nice. Nice. Where is she right now?
Georgetown.
Oh, okay. All right. I have a niece at Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, wouldn't that be weird?
Connecticut, New York, Amherst, Georgetown.
Yeah, I was like, wow, wouldn't it be weird if they're at the same school?
Yeah.
Okay, so when you came here at 25, you came here for your education, for the most part.
Right. And primarily it was for the purpose of education, but also I wanted to have my daughter grow up in a better system and better society, and I wanted them, my children, to have a better life. And that's what brought me here primarily.
Makes sense.
Yes.
So you had done, I didn't realize till right before the show, that the program that you did with Carl and Linda on, must have been near a holiday of some sort. Was it near 4th of July or something, if I remember right? And it was about, you know, the immigration
right. So
topic?
Actually, I have been with Carl's and Linda's show for over a year now. I'm a guest there every month on First Tuesday.
Okay. I didn't know if you were still doing that.
Right. I actually, at one point of time, I said to Carl, Carl, it doesn't make a difference. And he said, nope, you keep going. And I said, all right, sir.
Yeah, because, so, no, people do, people hear. And they're like, hey, you know, I know who that guy is. I mentioned who was going to be on the program and ran into a few people. And they said, I've heard that guy before.
So July 4th, I actually did a show. And what you're referring to was an opinion editorial article I wrote in Reading Record Searchlight. And it was titled, How Long Does It Take for Us to Become an American? And that was a basically a question for all of us to look back and ask ourselves, how long do we continue to identify ourselves with an hyphenated identity like Indian-American, African-American, Mexican-American, Hispanic-American, Jewish-American, Muslim-American, Irish-American, or any other thing?
Sure.
Or do we just start identifying ourselves as an American? And for someone like me, who has only been here for 16, 17 years or so, and still have an accent, I can understand. People may see me as Indian American because I look like that. I have an accent like that. But what disturbs me is if my future generation, my children, continue to be identified as and continue to identify themselves as Indian American because they were not born here. I'm sorry, they were not born outside. They were born here.
They grew up here.
Mm-hmm. So they need to identify themselves as just American. And that's the same thing for African Americans or any other group. And what I wrote at that time was that that article is available on Record Searchlight, still if someone is interested.
We'll pull that.
And primarily, it was to emphasize that its onus is on all of us to identify ourselves just as an American, not with a hyphenated identity. Because if we are calling ourselves African-American, don't we realize that all of us actually came from Africa initially? So that's where the humans immigrated out of. So should we, how many generations does it take for us to become American?
Yeah, right. Well, you always wonder, and if you were born here, right. like we were, you don't, it's not something we actually have personal knowledge of, so then, you know, we're considered mean and bad if we make comments about that, so it's kind of fun to hear your take on it.
Yeah, well, you know, I had that exact same conversation with the fellow I work with. He was born here. His parents were born in Mexico, and he identifies himself as Mexican-American, and I asked him why, you know, and he's going to have a child here any day now, and I asked him, I said, well, at what point will you be American?
At what point your children or grandchildren
exactly,
will be American?
Exactly, and he said, well, it's my culture that I don't want to lose, is I don't want to lose that identity of being a Mexican, and I kind of understand that a little bit, but I agree with you. If you're born here, you're raised here, you believe in our way of life and our ideology, you're American.
Here is my take on this. People say that why should I, and I was actually criticized in some of the comments on that article, was that why shouldn't you take pride in your past and culture? And I have an issue with that, and I'll explain to you why. I'm absolutely in favor of celebrating it. You can celebrate
your
culture,
heritage,
your
right.
past, whatever you want to celebrate. I'm all for celebration. But when you start taking pride in it, it has a risk involved that it's a slippery slope. Soon it becomes a distinct identity. Mm-hmm. You identify yourself as that, someone else will identify you as that. And then if you come around and complain about discrimination, your case will be weaker.
mm-hmm. Yeah, because that doesn't make any sense.
Right. And then, at the same time, you are going to look down upon someone else tomorrow, or your children may, because you identify yourself as separate. Country was based on e pluribus unum. And the politicians want to divide us in those groups. We are playing in their hands. You know, I wrote that Congress has all these caucuses, which are
sure.
Asian-American caucus, Hispanic-American caucus, Black caucus. Well, tomorrow, if a white European caucus emerges, then don't blame yourself. So, for that reason, we have to understand that if we advance our identity politics, it's going to come back and bite us. And it's for everyone, every one of us, not just Blacks or Asians. It's for whites also. It's for people may divide you. Politicians will divide you on basis of, hey, urban voters versus rural voters, on the basis of religion. I have seen a lot of divisions of identity politics in the rest of the world, and it doesn't end well. We don't want to go that route.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people feel like they're being, I don't know, I guess it's probably a little bit of each. On the one hand, if you can get special recognition because you would be defined as a special group, maybe they see that as a good thing. I don't see it as a good thing, but I'm not going to be a special group, so.
It's a problem. It's a problem to identify ourselves as one. At the same time, you know, we cannot forget that, yes, we did have a history of slavery, we did have a history of segregation, and nobody can deny that, and we do not want to trivialize that. And it's important to remember that in some way racism may exist, but it exists bilaterally. You know, whites may be suspicious of Blacks, and Blacks may be suspicious of white, and they all may be suspicious of Asians, or Asians may be suspicious of them. So that racism is part of evil inside our heart. What's more important is to realize and practice that it does not become institutionalized.
Sure.
And in America, that's one thing we have done here. That's one thing the country has done here.
That institutionalized the racism?
That institutionalized of racism has been fought and has been terminated in most of the places. I mean, if you see in Civil War, most of the people who died were white. And on both the sides. And why did the country go to war with itself? Just to end that slavery. If you see the time of Martin Luther King's fight, civil war, civil rights struggle, there were a lot of whites who supported that. So institutionalization of racism is bad. And that's something which we're glad doesn't exist, even if it does exist in small pockets or in the hearts of few people. And that's something which we must celebrate, rather than celebrating ourselves, our own identity, in a way that it becomes an identity politics. And that's what the problem I have with.
Sure. Now, when your kids were little, you obviously had a decision to make. You know, how you guys were going to, both coming from India, so obviously you had all the cultural things with that. How'd you do that?
Well, when I go on Carl Linda's show, there are a lot of things some people who listen to both the shows may know about. I have been talking about comparison between different countries like India and U.S. So we all love to feel that, oh, you know, wherever I was born is the best country. But there are a lot of problems in older societies from Asia,
sure,
which we don't want to bring over here, like caste system, arranged marriages, women's status in the society, problem of girl child facing. And that was one reason I wanted to move out of India. So my take on this, our take on this was always that children should grow up and learn from everyone, not just from us.
There you go.
They should learn from their school, they should learn from their neighbors, they should learn from the people around them, the society in the town, in the village, in the city, wherever they go, in the sports. So I never tried to direct my children towards one particular culture. Because more the learning, from more the sources, better it is for children. And let them find their own way. And I think they're growing up fine. I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it is something that everybody has to choose, but I'm seeing it go, I don't know, I think we're probably all on the same page. It seems like it's going backwards instead of forwards.
Yeah, the problem is when, if I told my children that you must stay Indian, you must learn the language, you must learn the culture, and you must behave like that, then my question is, why am I in America? Why don't I go back to India? If I want to...
It sounds so much better when you say it than when, you know...
Well, you don't say that. You'll be in trouble.
Exactly. That's what I mean. But it's like, people want to know. It's like, I don't get it. You know, why do people come here? And now, you came here on purpose. Did you intend to stay here when... You know, did you guys plan to... I was going to say convert. We don't convert to Americans to be Americans. We do the citizenship. I was hung up on the religion part. I lost my way.
Primary purpose was to get an education, higher education,
sure,
and have a better life for our children. And when we came here, we thought it was basically money.
Mm-hmm.
That America has more money and we will get a better life. But over the years, what we realized is it's much more than that. We read a lot about U.S. history. We visited a lot of places. I remember visiting Lincoln's birthplace, Springfield,
mm-hmm,
and George Washington's house on Mount Vernon. And what impressed me was George Washington, Mount Vernon is a big, huge place, but his own house was just a small, ordinary place, which looked like any ordinary family's place, and they kept adding additions and making some changes. It wasn't a sprawling palace. It wasn't huge mansion. It was a land was big, but his own house itself was not. And what impressed me was, struck me was, when I compared that with India or any other older cultures in Asia or even in Europe, all these kings and queens had huge palaces, huge, just amazingly beautiful structures. And they were kings and queens forever. And here was this guy who, if he wanted to be, could have been king. He could have been the president forever.
Yeah, he said no.
He said no.
Mm-hmm.
In most other countries, people become presidents or prime ministers forever, and then their children become one, then their grandchildren become. It's a dynasty. Even in democracy, it becomes a dynasty like a monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy didn't do it. Plus, not just him. Since then, for 225 years, nobody did it except FDR. So that's something amazing. Why and how this happened? And that's what impressed me most. So we realized that it's something more about this country than this money. Money is a secondary thing. It's a result. But there's something in the culture which is much more beautiful.
And I think that's I think you're hitting it right on the head. It's the culture. It's and I think you know, I've traveled a little bit abroad, so has Aaron. And I think everybody should travel overseas and experience other cultures, and then come back and tell me how bad it is here. Because it's as bad as people think it is here, it's still way, way, way better than most places in the world. And I don't think you can really appreciate that until you've actually experienced it. I mean, there's countries you can't go to a grocery store and buy, you know, fruit without a blemish on it. You know, you can't go to a department store and buy clothes from all over the world at reasonable prices. And, you know, people might think, oh, everything's really expensive. Not really. When you really boil it down and look at what it took to get it here and market it and put it on the shelf for you to walk in and buy it. I mean, is that what you've experienced?
So definitely the lifestyle is much better here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's several economic factors behind that. Free economy has a big role to play in that.
Now, do you see the when you speak about the economy, just since the current administration has taken office, do you see some changes, or do you feel a change happening as far as even a separation with the races, with our culture? Do you see a difference or feel a difference coming or happening right now?
So I think that's been happening over years.
Mm-hmm.
And rather decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I have come to believe is this is a constant struggle. And there are two opposing forces always working in human history. On one side are the forces who want to control other men and want to rule other men. On the second side are the forces which want to set the man free, which is how we are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a constant struggle which has run in human history forever.
Yep, doesn't matter what culture, doesn't matter what time period.
Yeah, doesn't matter
if they're human, they either want to help you or they want to boss you around.
Right. And then what happens is it's just every time the good force is more predominant in a culture, the society becomes better and it has better fruits in terms of economy as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then it doesn't last forever. We are just a blip on the human history. Before U.S. was all monarchy, all kings, divine right to rule us. On the other hand, this country started, and that's why this country is exceptional, because it said, no, man can rule themselves and come together and make their own government for the people, of the people, by the people, rather than giving the right to rule to, divine right to rule to a king or a single person.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is that over time, the forces which want to control us have tried their best to control us. And there is something which they can achieve by revolution, by usurping the system, by a violent war, or they can do it progressively, slowly, by changing our life. And the way they do that is by promising us the moon, by promising us the services, promising us the benefits and a good life. And there's no free lunch in this life.
No.
And, you know, we're not going to be able to just let it run itself. It requires our input. All right, on that happy note, we've got to take a really quick break, or we'll do them all at the end of the hour like we did at the beginning. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You've got a listen button there. You can pop in on the chat room. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM. What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them? Got a picture of her mama in heels and pearls. She's trying to make it in her daddy's world. She's an American girl. An American girl.
We're back. Hey, we were talking on the break here, and we have so...
Yeah, we're super sorry you didn't hear that, because that was too good minutes.
We have so much more to talk about.
It was two good minutes of information there. Well, we were asking because, of course, you know, I've never been to India, and I don't know a lot about that. And so we were asking, so you made a comment that girls had a different future in India. And I said, well, could your wife have been a doctor there? And you said, oh, yes. And I'm thinking, well, okay, so career-wise, she can do that. But then you said the caste system is very much alive, although they are considered a democracy. So none of those pieces seem to fit together in the puzzle. And how does that relate to our country? And that's what we did in 2 minutes. Can you believe that, everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're all shaking their head. They're like, no, she's lying.
There's a lot, of pieces, so go ahead and try of pieces of the puzzle that make us that much different.
Yeah. Well, I'd never thought about George Washington's house being, I mean, I've been there a couple times, and I'd never thought how that would look, to somebody from another country. And the idea that it wasn't a palace, and it was like, oh, this is a totally different place. I never thought about that as being a signal that this was I just thought about it being George Washington's house.
Right. The same thing about Lincoln, when I visited Lincoln's house.
Sure.
Same thing I saw there also.
So go back to that caste system and how that works, because that leads us kind of into our Second Amendment idea. And I thought, you're pretty slick over there. That's a pretty good idea.
So in most of the parts of the world, especially where the older cultures exist, there is a hierarchical system in which humans belong, and they're supposed to stay there. Nowhere it's more profound as it is in India, in my own country of birth, where people are born in certain caste system, that they belong to one of the four castes: priests, warriors, merchants, or the lowest most caste on the ladder is the one which is supposed to do all the dirty work, like cleaning, janitorial work, handling the dead animals, and they're called untouchables.
I remember that from like 7th grade.
Yeah, and what that means is they're not supposed to be touching anyone. Nobody wants to be touched by them even. Their shadow should not fall on a higher caste system person. No one can marry them. They shouldn't marry outside their caste. And they're supposed to continue doing the dirty work. They're not allowed to study. Now, things have changed a little bit.
Mm.
it was much, much, much worse earlier. Since India's independence, 1947, constitutional republic.
Bill forgot to turn off his phone. Hey, so did I.
Constitution, which was written by actually one of the untouchables, and interestingly, his name was Ambedkar, and he was educated in U.S. and Columbia University. So he went back, wrote India's constitution, and he wrote in constitution, all men are equal, just like American constitution. So that made some difference in Indian society over the last 60 years. So things are not as bad as they were 60 years ago, but still it continues to be ingrained in people's mind because it comes from their religion.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing, because when it's a social thing, you can move that.
Right.
But when it is absolutely a part of your belief system,
right,
with your religion, and God said it goes that way.
Right.
How do you get out of that?
Right. So if they say that God created all human beings in four different positions, which is what they should be doing as the service, then there is no hope, there is no chance. Compare that to the American system where they say all men are created equal. So that is the difference which I saw there. And what I was talking about earlier with Aaron and Bill was these people who are at the bottom of the society there. And they're not small percentage, mind you. That's like one third of the society. Or women who are supposed to just worship their husbands. Or the little girls who are many times a female child is aborted within the mother's body because she's a female, or killed soon after.
Because girls are
not wanted.
Less productive in their eyes? Or?
Not because of productive, because they don't want it. Number one, they believe that their blood will continue through the son. Number two, they have to pay dowry for the girl's marriage.
Oh, girls are expensive.
It's expensive.
Okay, all right.
Third, that they have to protect the girls for the honor. Because
girls are just higher maintenance.
Exactly.
So
nobody wants them.
Do we have a restriction on the number of kids?
No.
Okay.
No. So whether you are an untouchable, whether you're a woman, but you're in a position of not having power. And what I was talking to Aaron and Bill was that
sure.
The reason they don't have power is because there is no constitutional right to bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
So they cannot rise up and protect themselves. Only people who have arms in India and most of the world, most of the places where the corruption is high and the societies are bad, most of the people who have arms there are the crooks.
Sure.
Or the politicians or the rulers.
So the common man can't rise up.
Every citizen has no right to keep and bear the arms. And that's what I was saying earlier, that's something which has made this country, has underwritten the freedom in U.S. is the right to keep and bear arms.
So what would you, I have somebody in the chat room that said all men are created equal except if you're black or poor or disagree with the rulers. I like the fact that you're laughing. I think that,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So this is what I believe in, and we'll come to this probably. I just want to go a little bit different direction than I was initially thinking. But let me answer that question right now. No ruler, or no king, or no president, or no senator, or no congressman can guarantee our equality.
Sure.
We are naive, and I'm directly talking to the chatting person now. I don't know the name of the person, but please hear me out very clearly. If we believe that we will have a great person or a good person in the office and we will be successful in ensuring equality, my friend, you are mistaken. Power is a curse. It's like the ring from the Lord of Rings. Anyone who bears the ring, anyone who wears the ring for long enough will become a golem. So, if you think that some people are better than others in ruling us and will ensure that the blacks are equal to whites and other way, you are mistaken. What ensures that is the principle. The principle was, the best statement of that principle was Declaration of Independence, second line, which says all men are created equal with certain unalienated rights to life, liberty, and justice. And I'm just paraphrasing it.
Yeah.
So that principle...
We'll assume pursuit of happiness.
And pursuit of happiness, yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, created by their creator. That principle, belief in that principle, is what ensured that we eliminate slavery or eliminate segregation, and not any party, not any person. So, we have to believe in that principle and work for that. There is a lag between the principle and the practice. But that's the principle which forced this country to confront itself and go to war with itself under Lincoln and abolish slavery. So, if you think that there are certain people or certain party which can go in the power and create more equality, you are mistaken. Emphasis on equality according to the Declaration of Principle and constitution based on that, that's what we need. And universal freedom and universal equality is what we need to emphasize. But don't believe for a single minute that a single party or any party will actually do that unless we insist on that, unless every citizen insists on that.
Sure.
And I think that's where we're in trouble now, is we're looking at our government thinking they're going to fix it for
us. Exactly. Because governments are here to divide us and rule us. We need to be suspicious of them, careful about that, and protect our equality, protect our freedom. And it's not a collective equality. When we go for a collective equality, that becomes a problem. It's an individual equality.
I do believe that's called Marxism, isn't it?
Yeah.
The collective version of equality?
And even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Marxism is still much better than other situations which you have seen. There are even worse things. So that collective equality is a problem. That's a tribal equality that says that, you know, Muslims should fight against Christians and Christians should fight against Muslims. Or one tribe should fight against another tribe. Shia, the Sunni should fight with each other. Or that's not what we want. What is the ultimate guarantee of our freedom is ourselves. I will protect my own freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one else is going to protect my freedom.
It's a little bit like integrity. It's yours to keep or give away.
Yes.
So we better... Okay, we need to take a quick break.
You can
we're all messed
me,
up on our
but
break.
But not slave me.
I like it. I'd rather fight on my feet than live on my knees.
Yes.
Mark Baird says that a lot. Hey, so we'll be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. See, if I look the other way, then you have to do the talking.
Hey,
I pretend I can't see you.
Hey, this is the best place to be on a Sunday morning for a little history lesson.
I know. We're getting so much good information. Well, we were talking about, you know, as a spinoff from the comment in the chat room with, and if you want to join us there, wethepeopleradio.us, click the listen button, chat window pops up. There you go. We were talking about the comment that people feel in this country that there's just a tremendous And this will be a huge election issue, huge split between the haves and the have-nots. And that's a wedge issue that the left really, really wants to promote, that we're just keeping these people in extreme poverty. And Dr. Danuka was pointing out that extreme poverty is defined as...
when you can't have enough food in a day. You don't have 2,000 calories in a day.
And that's, you said worldwide, that's what, a dollar a day?
A day. So that's extreme poverty.
So we're looking at people in this country who would, by that definition, have less than $30 a month.
Right.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry, but I think we have enough charitable, even if you couldn't get government assistance because you couldn't, I don't know, you just, I bet you could. It doesn't mean that you have a great house or any of that, which doesn't mean that it's acceptable and that we should leave everybody to that end. But you're talking about in India, you have like 50% of the people are starving.
Yes, 50% or so, approximately that number.
Sure.
Are below the extreme poverty line. And they don't have any hope. In China, it used to be the same. They have... improved and pulled out a lot of people out of extreme poverty over the last 20 years, primarily because of their expanded trade.
Okay.
Primarily because of the economic improvements they have made with the free trade. It's like not exactly free trade in China yet, but still.
Sure, it's a little closer. And then, so we were talking about, you know, I asked if you had welfare in India, and you said they're kind of doing some programs where they give people food, but I think most people, that expression, you know, that expression of teach a person to fish and they fish forever or whatever, but I thought your spin on it was good.
Yeah, what I believe is that you don't have to give anyone a fish. And actually, I go a step further, that you don't even have to teach anyone how to fish. Just leave that person alone. Let that person catch the fish himself. He will catch it. He'll catch it for himself and for his family. What we have to ensure is that no one can take away his fish by force or fraud.
Yeah. And
that's a big one right
there. There are a lot of people that think, well, if we just took away everybody's fish and gave them to the other guy, everybody would be...
Everybody will be without a fish then.
Exactly.
Because what happens is when everybody's fish is taken away, who's going to take it? And who's going to redistribute it? It's going to be...
Oh, kidding me?
Central government.
First hour's already over?
And it's going to be some ruler or monarch who's going to do it.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then everybody else will be poor.
No, but I think you're absolutely right. I think people can figure out how to catch that fish on their own if you just leave them alone.
This is like an anti... We're going to end on...
Stop regulating them.
Yeah, we're going to end on anti-regulation.
And stop making them think there's a handout out there if they don't catch the fish.
All righty. The end of the first hour. We'll be back. Leave the People Radio. One more hour.
I'm on stage. Look at me go.
Oh, he's got issues. Hey, so you're joining the second hour of We the People Radio. We are here at KCNR. Phone number that we never give you. Our secret phone number is 530-605-4567. We tend to be sort of a coffee and listening program on Sunday mornings, but you are free to call. Go ahead. And you can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we usually have a tremendous amount of information on the website. Today it's a little skinnier. Dr. Danuka he's not burying us in all sorts of links and science and, I don't know, the last few weeks we've had sort of a labor-intensive programs on topics that most of us are not really super well-versed. Today we're just talking about Americanness a little bit from a multitude of angles. And you have a list over there on your side of the table of a few things you want to get to this hour. So tell us what they are, and then we'll be that will hold us all to task together.
Actually, I love the freestyle way.
I know, but it's chaotic. And
it's awesome, but I definitely want to cover a few things today. One of them will be Obama Doesn't Care. It's Obama Doesn't Care.
I like Obama Doesn't Care. That's fun.
The second thing I would like to really cover is Second Amendment.
Okay.
A little bit more.
Obamacare, Second Amendment. I'm putting this on my list.
And third thing I would really like to cover is immigration issue.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. All right, so how do you want to do it?
So let's just talk about Obamacare a little bit.
Okay.
Now, this is a long topic, and we have limited time. So I would like to summarize it into what it was meant to do versus what it is doing. So the primary purpose of, or at least the said purpose, was to insure more people, 30 million or so uninsured people, to provide insurance to them. Second purpose was to reduce the cost of healthcare and reduce the cost of insurance. Right? Those were the two central purposes which were supposed to be the goal of
that. That was the bill of goods that we were being sold.
Very, very simple. I mean, very not simple to achieve, but simple goal.
Better coverage for everybody, and actually coverage for everybody at a lower cost.
And a lower cost.
And everybody could agree on that.
Right? Yeah, sure. Why not?
And you were a hater if you disagreed.
What's happening? And over the last 1 year, I've been speaking with Carl about this, and I've been saying that that's actually not the real purpose. And I'll come to that, what the real purpose was.
Those of us who said that wasn't the real purpose, though, however, have been branded for the last few years as a bunch of conspiracy nuts, blah, blah, blah. And isn't it interesting? It's one of those things, you're right, and there's a certain vindication in that. Although you're sort of sorry because you're wishing you weren't right.
Right, right. So what's happened is, out of those 30 million, we know the stats now that only a couple of millions have signed up.
Right.
Just 2 days ago, there was an article in Wall Street Journal which actually mentioned, out of all the people who signed up, only 10 or 11% or so did not have the insurance coverage before.
Wow, 10%?
11% or so.
Okay.
The rest of them, almost 90%, already had an insurance and just changed the insurance.
Wow.
The second thing we know is that the cost of insurance has gone up for everyone.
Yep.
For anyone who is not buying it on exchanges, cost has gone up by 10-15% every year directly because of this Affordable Health Care Act.
Yeah.
And it's actually been, I have received notices from my insurance company showing me exactly how much cost has gone directly because of ACA.
Well, you're covering, anybody who's ever dealt with insurance at any level knows that a group health plan costs more for your employees than individual health care. Because with group, the insurance company is rolling the dice. They don't know who they're going to get or what's going to be wrong with them. So they have to kind of pad the thing in order to be able to cover everyone. Well, we basically made that decision for the entire country.
And which is fine. I believe that we should provide the help and services to people who cannot afford it for some time. Let's say children, pregnant women, very old, very disabled. Yes. We should provide the help because I believe what Jesus said. Do what you do for the least of my brothers and sisters, you do it for me. However, once it is done by central federal authorities, they don't do it right. Plus, they do it in a corrupt manner by making exemptions for their favorite groups. So what has been the result?
And that's been wonderful.
So what's been the result? That cost went up for insurance for most of the people in the country. For employers, the cost went up. Just yesterday, I received a notice. I have my own practice. I have employees. We have group health insurance. And just received a notice yesterday that cost of our group employee health insurance will go additionally 5% up because of what they're calling a reinsurance tax, which is these big companies which are providing insurance on exchanges. If they run the risk of losing money, government said, all right, don't worry. We'll hedge your risks. You can tap into an reinsurance account if you lose money over the next few years. So what's happening is, to cover that cost, government has an extra tax on the employee benefits.
Oh.
On the insurance cost which employees pay or the employers pay. That's coming out to be approximately 5% on top of another 10% or so which was there before. And then here's the kicker. Who bears this burden? Obama went ahead and exempted big unions and big businesses from that requirement. Because saying, oh, they're self-insured, they don't have to cover that. So who is bearing the burden? All the small businesses. So that's the second thing is happening. Even by the government's own estimates, in next 10 years, 30 million people will still be uninsured. The same number we're starting now. Of course, population will be expanding a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's part of the reason. But it's not going to be a panacea. It was supposed to be, it was sold as, that it's going to solve all the problems.
Sure.
And the cost is going to increase. But more importantly, that's the result which is happening, which was the real purpose of it. What's happening is, most of the private physicians are leaving their practices and quitting, taking a job in a big system or retiring. Over last 7-8 years, I've been here in Reading, almost half the physicians have left their practices.
No kidding.
You can go and check the stats.
All disciplines, you know, GPs,
in primary practices, more than half have left, and specialists, one third or more have left, and even half of them actually. In so many fields, they have quit their private practices and joined the hospitals or bigger groups or moved out of the area or retired simply.
Wow.
Why? And that was the real purpose of this. That's where we come from. The real purpose of this act was to control 18% of economy. And they cannot do it. Few people cannot control it if there are hundreds of thousands or millions of small entrepreneurs or small physicians or small practices or small pharmacies. They can only do it if they consolidate that in few big groups, which then become too big to fail. And that's the whole objective. Because once they are consolidated in few small groups, just like big banks, which become too big to fail, then government can provide them free money.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians can get a kickback. I'll be very blunt here, a kickback. Not just lobbying.
Sure.
And that's the whole purpose of this. And I call this Walmartization of healthcare.
That's actually a good term.
What's happened in our country right now is, there's nobody for small people. There's nobody for average citizen. We have the government for either the big unions or the big businesses. They are exempted from the requirements, or the laws are passed to help them and to crush the small competitors. Because too many small individual minded people running their own businesses, they don't listen to the government. They tell the politician or president that, I don't care what you say. I don't need to give you money if I don't like you. I will live the life I want. But these few big organizations, whether unions or businesses, are in bed with each other and are in bed with the government, which is increasingly more looking like more like a monarchy.
Sure. And because when the free enterprise system becomes part of government,
right,
that completely screws up all of our checks and balances.
See what happened in the bank bailout. couple of trillion dollars went out, if they just gave the money to every citizen individually, all of us should see some money, or all of us at least should know someone who got the money.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that?
Mm-mm.
Do you know anyone?
Yeah, no.
So where did that money go? It went to few banks. It went to few people's pocket. And that's the whole purpose.
Which is what you see in the countries we were speaking about in the first hour. That's what you see in these really super corrupt places. It are these giant, these giant giveaways to their cronies.
Yes.
And it's not supposed to happen here.
And that's not a capitalism.
No, it isn't.
That's actually a crony capitalism. On the other hand, what Obama and his buddies are promoting in the name of left politics or in the name of socialism or Marxism, I will say that actually, that's actually not even Marxism. Because at least you had to work under Marxism. At least you had to work in communism. What they are saying is we are going to extend the unemployment benefits for seemingly forever.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to work. Now, as I said earlier, I'm all for helping those who are not in a position to help themselves right now, but it cannot be done at central government level. It cannot be done at federal level.
Sure.
Because federal government is too far away from us. We cannot influence it. We cannot do anything about it. If we have to provide services, we must do it at local level,
mm-hmm.
city, village, county level, maximum state level. When we let it go out of that, then it becomes not our government. It becomes government of few elites.
Yeah.
Who will promise, sitting in a big chamber, in a big palace, and will not care what the common average citizen thinks or says outside that.
Well, because, I mean, if you look now, you know, and we haven't even had the next shoe drop with all the small businesses being canceled that they're talking about at the end of the year. That's coming. So instead of insuring all the uninsured, what we've done is uninsure the insured.
Absolutely.
We literally put a program in reverse, and we still haven't insured the people who are supposed to be in there. Really, some. But if you don't get the subsidy...
Here's the beauty of it.
You know, it's not going to help you.
How are these uninsured people going to be insured? The mechanism in the act is by providing them subsidies, by providing them tax credits or direct subsidies. I would be much, much happier if the government just did that in two simple lines, that we will make all health insurance costs to be tax deductible. Or if someone cannot buy it, we'll provide them credit.
But that still doesn't work if they don't have a job.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, for the comparison, if we have to have a central law, it would have been simpler to do it in two lines.
I agree.
Rather than hundreds and thousands of pages of regulations, which basically, that's what I'm saying. They could have done that. If they just wanted to do that part, to provide subsidies.
Just address the people that didn't have insurance.
Right.
Leave the rest of the folks
right.
alone.
If they just wanted to do that, they just wanted to provide the tax subsidies or credits or direct subsidies, they could have done that without all the big problematic law around it.
But that wouldn't have given them control.
Exactly.
That's it.
They didn't have to have the exchanges.
That's right.
You know, we have eBay. We have an excellent exchange program for other things. We could have had the same exchange program run by a private industry. It would have sprung. For auto insurance, you can go and buy it. But we didn't have that. The reason was to control people. The purpose was not to extend insurance.
No. Because if it was, we would have done it through the insurance companies. Instead, all we've done is make them crazy and make it impossible for them to do their jobs.
Well, not only that, I think even insurance companies are in bed with this government.
Because
they are not losing money.
Not yet.
No, they will not lose the money. I mark my word.
Yeah.
The government is...
If we don't, but see, then there's the... I was reading about that, I don't know, last couple of weeks, been following that. On the one hand, when you say, well, the insurance companies are going to need a bailout because we just screwed up the mix of their thing, and people say, well, we can't possibly do that. And initially, that's the response. However, if we do let them fail, I'm not pitching like too big to fail, but I mean, if the insurance companies do go down the drain, automatic single payer, which I think is what they actually were after.
So they will do the same thing for the, they're already doing that. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That they're already supporting the insurance companies. And if insurance companies lose money, the same Obama or same government, which is actually saying that, oh, these insurance companies are big bad companies, they're going to come and say, oh, they need the money. They're too big to fail.
Just like they do with the banks.
Exactly. Yes. Just talk to
just
the wealth.
Same program.
So they are in bad with each other.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so, never... This is not where we intended to go. I mean, as a... you know, if the goal was altruistic and it was about insuring the uninsured, yeah, we completely screwed
but
that
they,
one up.
But if they need the insurance companies now, but if they put everybody on Medicare, do they still need the insurance companies at that point?
A single payer thing, I think, is not going to happen in this country because
say that again.
It's not going to happen because every citizen understands that we don't want to live under a big central government.
Exactly. Yeah, because we would literally be moving that in.
Right.
Okay, we have to take a really quick break because Bob's over there fidgeting and we're messing up. We're messing up his timing. All right, we'll be back with you in 2 minutes. We're going to chat more about this. We've checked Obamacare off our list. Now we got to move into immigration and Second Amendment. No pressure. We have 35 minutes. Be right back with you. You're listening to We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM.
So many lies, twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's the same.
I'd like to be in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
For a small fee.
And it's getting bigger.
It'd be so nice.
One look at us and they charge twice.
I have my own washing machine.
What will you have though to keep clean?
Skyscrapers bloom in America.
Cadillacs zoom in America.
Industry boom in America.
Wealth in a room in America.
Wealth in a room.
Yeah. All it needs a white shirt and a hot rock to wash it on, and I'm happy.
Nice job, Bob. Little show tunes this morning.
West Side Story.
Of course. I think everyone had to do that in eighth grade. Didn't you have to do it in eighth grade?
No, I was fortunate enough to miss out on that.
Oh, I like, okay, social dancing and West Side Story. That was like a rule in junior high. I think those were the rites of passage.
Oh, that was East Coast.
It was just for us freaks in the East Coast.
Yeah, that was East Coast. We did Sutter's Fort.
Oh, yeah. In New Building, California missions, we didn't do any of that.
That's right.
I got to have kids for that.
Hey, I'm a New Yorker. Remember that. Don't say anything bad about East Coast.
Yeah, right. See, that's the thing. You skipped it all. Let's see, you went to elementary school in India. You came here. You lived on the East Coast. You got a variety of experience. All right. So before we goof off too bad, you boys were having an interesting dialogue during the break.
Just a couple more points on Obamacare, and then we're going to
jump into that.
Yeah. All right, go for it.
So I just wanted to highlight one more thing was that we talk about single-payer system being very good in socialist countries of Europe. We have to remember one thing, that size matters. We are a much bigger country than Northern European countries. We are like 5 times, 10 times bigger than them. And same principles which can be applied in a small countries like Singapore or Denmark or the Netherlands or even Canada, because population is very small there, can be applied to a much larger population like United States. If you want to compare apples with apples, not apples with oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Compare United States with country with a similar size population, whether it's India, China, Indonesia, Mexico. And when you see in these countries, some of them have a single healthcare system for a long time. In India, we had this government-provided services everywhere, but they were absolutely corrupt, inefficient, and even a poor man didn't want to go there. If he had to sell his house, he would rather do that and go to private doctors than go to a government doctor. Because there are no medicines, doctors didn't show up.
Right.
Didn't actually show up in clinics, period. They had a good salary, but they wouldn't show up.
Wow.
So
something we have to look forward to.
Right.
And your appointment was set up, you know, 8 months.
Yeah, oh, right.
Forget about appointments. Forget about it. It's a completely different system.
Yeah, yeah.
You have those medicines, the clinic medicines are supposed to be, they are provided by the government, but they were sold in a black market.
Oh.
And not provided to the patients. Nice. Operating rooms were filthy. So what happened there was a second parallel system developed of private doctors, which is happening in UK also now and some places in Canada as well. So if a single-payer system comes, and if progressives want to bring a single-payer system, I say, go for it. Let's do it. It's going to expose them faster than the current mess they are trying to create to control the economy. Unfortunately, I know they are not going to bring that because they are going to benefit from the current system which they have created, which is basically a crony capitalism, mm-hmm. in which few big organizations, whether unions or hospitals or insurance, are in bed with the big governments, and they feed each other and completely want to eliminate the competition from average citizens, whether they're pharmacists, whether they're physicians. What they want to do primarily is, but more importantly, and that's the crux of the matter, what they want to do is they want to destroy the trust. They want to destroy the relationship between the provider of a service and the person who needs that service. That's the most sacrosanct thing between a physician and a patient. They want to destroy that.
So that we stop relying on, like, and when I say our doctor, I don't mean that in general. I mean the person we go to.
Because that's what takes a patient to a doctor. Then the patient trusts that doctor, that he's going to get me better.
Sure.
And as long as that exists, politicians cannot control them. Because those two parties will have direct interaction with each other and will decide what is the correct fees, what is the correct thing. And if the patient doesn't trust the doctor, he'll go to someone else, mm-hmm. if he has the options. Until that trust is broken by the government cannot control us. And the whole purpose is to destroy that trust between individuals, amongst the small businesses or small practices or individuals. And then they can control this big, huge machines easily from a central place. And that's what we need to remember.
Yeah, because the government would never violate your trust.
And I want to differentiate.
Oh, great. We just lost our audience.
I want to differentiate here from a government to government. I'm talking about a local government is okay. And it's not that we trust that government, but we can influence it more. We can change it more. But bigger the government, more centralized the government is, less influence we have on it, and we cannot do anything about it. That's why all these services should be provided at local level. The local communities should decide what they want to do. And the central government, federal government role should be limited to security, external or internal.
Sure. Like the original things they were formed for.
That.
Yeah.
Everything else should be local, cities, county or state matter.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
well, we're seeing the same thing with education. You know, we're looking at the Obamacare of education with Common Core.
They're not going to do that.
Once people figure out what's wrong with it, getting rid of it is a huge mystery because it's hard to get a hold of. It came from the top down, rather. So your school boards didn't make those decisions. So leaning on them to make a change is the wrong place. And that's kind of like what happened with Obamacare.
What they want to do is they herd us. They herd us as cows in a small area. And that's the whole purpose they have. And they are going to do that by disarming us.
Yeah, so now we move in. Okay, so we're checking off Obamacare. We're checking that
right.
off?
Right. So let's just one few things I want to mention quickly about our right to bear arm. And that's so important because eventually, as I mentioned earlier, no one is going to protect our rights. Not the federal government, not the state government, not even local government. We have to protect our own rights. The purpose of government is to prevent people from taking each other's right by fraud or by violence. But they're not here to protect an individual if an individual cannot protect himself from the overreach of government.
Sure.
In fact, they want to take over your life completely. And the reason this country has been different is because there is a history, there is a culture of individuals and average citizens keeping arms. Because of that, Kin was scared. What happened in American history was revolution started partly because people here had arms. If they didn't have weapons, they couldn't have risen up. Most other countries, it doesn't work like that. In most countries, individuals and average citizens don't have the right to bear and keep arms. That's why they cannot defend their freedom. So we must not forget that. That's a fundamental right which will protect our other rights, including the government's overreach. And doesn't mean that we have to fight. Just the fear of it, just the fear that we have some weapons, keeps a tyrannical government, whether it's elected or unelected, under check, because they know that we can rise up. So I want to emphasize that point enough, because I've seen.
Yeah, we can't give away that.
We cannot give away that, because I've seen the lack of it, what it does to the rest of the world.
Sure, and in India, okay, so you were saying earlier in the first hour, in India, they can't get their rights, they can't increase their rights because they're not any kind of a threat.
So there
is. Does anyone have any guns in India?
Only the crooks, mafia, politicians, and politicians' forces.
Wow.
Average citizens cannot have the guns. Second thing, they don't have the private manufacturing of guns. So what happens is that first you have to have a license issued by the government, a permission.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you can't even buy it easily because there's only government manufacturing of guns. So both the things are necessary, and that's why half the people live under wretched poverty. That's why people who are untouchables can't rise up. And that's why women's condition is terrible, because arms are great equalizer.
Yeah, they
are. Weapons are great equalizer. So person who's in a weaker position, he's not a weak person, but in a weaker position, whether it's a woman, whether it's untouchable, whether it's a poor person, whether it is individual versus a mob, he suddenly has a little bit more equality compared to someone who has more power otherwise. And that's something which we have in this country, and we must cherish that, we must protect that. That's the fundamental requirement for us to protect other rights.
Well, I think that's why they put it in the Constitution, is they recognized there's a huge danger in the people losing their ability to keep the government in check.
Right.
Exactly.
So, another thing which we wanted to discuss was, and I know time is limited now, was immigration.
Of course, now let's talk about immigration. Why not? Because that's another small subject. We could
cover that in just a couple seconds.
Bob, do you want us to take a quick break and then you'll have that done, and then you don't have to...
Yeah, we got one more break. We can do it now, and then you've got the...
Then you don't have to
hour.
Throw the lasso on us?
All right.
Yeah. All right, fire away. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Dr. Danuka. We're chatting in a circular fashion about Obamacare, immigration, Second Amendment. If you missed the beginning, go back to wethepeopleradio.us and you can catch it on the archive.
Yep. Stay
Be right
tuned.
Back.
Stay tuned. Immigration's coming up.
Sun coming up over New York City. Driver in a traffic jam, staring at the faces in a rear view.
helps pay the rent. One could end up going to prison. One just might be president. Only in America dream boats carry the future to the heart of America.
I see a rainbow somewhere.
Holy cow. I
That's
just
a
found
lollipop a in my pocket.
I found a gift certificate for a unicorn in my handbag. Yeah.
Yeah, immigration. Boy, what a...
What a good lead-in song, though.
Yeah, what
nice job, Bob.
What a quick topic we have here.
Okay.
Where do we
so
go?
If people sneak into India and, like, you know, just want to hide out in there and all, what happens? How's that work out? Is that a problem for starters?
Know, that's a mess because they don't have any good execution of their laws. So it doesn't matter. Everything there runs in a parallel. Laws are on the books, but they're not exercised. So
nice. That's lovely.
So that's a mess in every field there. However, for immigration, here is my view on immigration. This country has been a magnet for immigrants forever.
Exactly.
And... that has actually helped build this country also, whether it's from Europe or from anywhere else. And that's built on this promise that give me, you're tired and you're hungry. And that's the interesting thing. No country in this world wants you're tired and hungry. Except America.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true.
And
kind of set ourselves up on that one, didn't we?
But it has made us better.
It has made
us better. Some people say that, oh, we should only have the skilled immigration from outside. And I'm like, I'm a skilled person when I came here, so it helps me. But how do you know that skilled person is going to be good for the country?
True.
He's probably going to just benefit from himself. What we need is when you get these tired and hungry people, when you fulfill that promise, they become yours forever. And that principle is based on the principle of Jesus. And he said, do for the least. What you do to the least of my brothers and sisters, you do for me. So that's the reason immigration is good for country. But here is a problem, the way it currently exists. Three problems. Number one, laws are not executed. So you have to execute the laws consistently unless you have a corruption. In law, more important thing is consistency, not the degree of punishment. People fear more if the law is consistently executed and not the degree of punishment. So you must execute it consistently. If you don't like it, change it. I would have been very happy if Obama tried his political capital on changing the immigration laws and fixing it rather than... healthcare, or if he had changed the drug laws or something.
Right.
Or like a three strike laws and those things. But that's the problem. You execute the law. If executive branch can decide, pick and choose what laws to exercise, what not to, then we are in a big trouble.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing more and more and more is choose to exercise this law, choose to pull off that one.
The second problem with immigration currently is people's desire to maintain a distinct identity, which we referred to early in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So if you come here, you become American. If you don't want to become an American, you can go back to your own country. You're most happy to do that. You're free to do that. Nobody's keeping you here. And I say that as an immigrant myself. and I said that earlier in the show. So distinct identity, hyphenated identity, should not be the basis of someone to continue to live their lives here. Should not become an identity politics, because it becomes a wedge politics. The third thing is welfare state. People who come here, if they work hard, if they are going to pay the taxes and play by the rules, then they are productive citizens. But on the other hand, if you're going to give them a handout, then it becomes a problem. So if we fix three problems, fix our consistency of law execution, fix the problem that we do not promote an identity politics, we don't have to provide anybody in any specific language of their home country. I couldn't speak English until I was 18. I had a little bit of knowledge of English as a second language, but couldn't speak it. When I came to America, I had to learn it. So everybody has to. We cannot provide services in their home country's language. Third, we do not provide any services for someone who does not want to work. If we do those things, immigration will be less of an issue. But even more important, let's talk about the problem specifically with Mexico. And I was mentioning this earlier. We have a long border which we can't defend or don't want to defend. And there we have a Mexico, which is a relatively poorer country, and people want to come into the United States. And let's take the bull by its horns. My solution to the problem is we should take over Mexico, and we should take over Central America until the Panama Canal, and then we'll have a very little border to defend. We'll have solved the problem of immigration. We'll have solved the problem of drug trade. And we'll have solved the problem of labor.
We could call it our West Bank.
Fun apart, I know what I mean. But if we could take over Louisiana, California, why can't we take over Mexico? It can become another state of the country. And we have smaller states. That's like we want to have state of Jefferson divided into smaller states and have it smaller states of country. Then there'll be no problem of immigration left.
Well, it brings in the other thing I wanted to mention was that a lot of people that come across the border, across the southern border, they want to come over here and bring their culture with them. Their culture doesn't work here. I'm not saying they have to get rid of their entire culture, but the culture of Mexico is in Mexico.
Right.
It's not in America.
You've got to leave it behind.
That's right.
You've got to leave it behind. You've got to become an American.
Same with any other country.
That's what we were talking in the initial part of the show. But I want to reconcile. This is very important for all of us to understand that progressives and left will use this as a wedge politics, immigration as a wedge politics.
Sure.
And we're talking about that.
Because this year is all about their little wedge issues.
That's what they've always done, haves or have-nots.
Yep.
Immigrants or non-immigrants, whites or blacks or Asians or anything else. So we cannot fall in that trap. What I was saying earlier was we have to use that as a boomerang. They're going to throw that on us, and what you do is you stay out of it, don't get drawn into that mudslinging, and let the boomerang on them. Let them ask them to execute the laws, to execute the American identity, not a hyphenated identity. So you cannot provide translations for everything. People have to learn English. And you cannot provide services for free. They have to earn it. Once you have that, the problem will be solved. And make Mexico another 51st state.
Well, that's an idea that hasn't been. So what about all the, I can hear right now people freaking out. What about just the rampant corruption? What about the blending of the government situation?
They have to live by our rules.
They'd be super excited about that.
They'll have to live by our rules.
Well, they all want to come over here and live by our rules, or not live by our rules, but
well, they really
live by our rules there.
Actually, this conversation is probably going on in Mexico because, there's a little bit of a feeling that we should become Mexico.
No, that's what we don't want to become.
I know, but
that's what we don't want to become.
That's what La Raza and all those guys, you know, we're going to take back our land because they see us as having stolen their land, and you know,
well,
without nitpicking here in the last 2 minutes.
I would say let's make Mexico into another state of America, as good as other states of America are, and all the way to Panama Canal. So,
Bill, what you know? What Bill's writing on the chat room? I'm just gonna out him. He says our military couldn't take over East LA, let alone Mexico. Nice. And then, of course, the next comment is we can dress up like Cheech and Chong and infiltrate East LA.
But we made a Louisiana purchase.
No, you're right. No, I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
You've taken everyone to a very creative place. They're having loads of fun with this.
But, you know, here is one thing I want to quickly, I know we are coming
to
the end. I want to bring this to
focus.
We talk about State of Jefferson.
Yeah.
And I love the principles and teachings of Jefferson. And I have a book on my table, Jefferson's Bible, which basically he extracted the life and teachings of Jesus, and that's something which I think was a guiding force behind him writing the Declaration of Independence and building this country the way it was built. For me, I love the idea of State of Jefferson, but I want the whole country to be State of Jefferson.
Exactly. It is kind of hard.
Our country, according to our president, wasn't based on Judeo-Christian laws, so... How do you overcome that?
So we want the whole country to become State of Jefferson, and if Mexico wants to be part of it, I would welcome it. How will it become? By not becoming cows. What they want us to become are cows. What I think we need to become is cowboys. Are you going to be, cow or cowboy?
I like that. That's a good bumper sticker. You want to be a cow or a cowboy? People will be like, what? It's good. That's a new, that's a nice new theme for the Jeffersonians. But no, it's getting back to,
today California, tomorrow Mexico.
Getting back to our own original principles. I can't say that we've covered this much territory in a very long time, Dr. Januka.
Expanding the territory.
We have expanded the territory. We've taken over part of the world now.
We're going to have you back because I think we're expanding some brains here.
I know. People will be like, get the chat room up. We got to weigh in. Bob, I hope you feel better. Since you're the last sickie in the team,
the last sickie standing.
Exactly.
All right, thank you, Aaron. Glad you're better.
Yeah. So
thank you for having me,
Bob, Dr. Nuka.
Thank you for coming.
Super swell. See you guys later. Archive on
See you, everybody.
People.